Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Despite big gains in gender equality across many fields, when it comes to women in business schools, a stubborn question persists. Why are there so few? Women make up just 31% of the population of the nation's top business schools.
And that's true even at the prestigious Harvard Business School, where a little more than a third of the students are women. And historically, not many of them make it to the top tier of their classes. There are also scant women professors who account for less than a quarter of the B school's faculty.
So in 2010, Harvard President Drew Gilpin Faust appointed a new dean who launched an effort to change the curriculum, rules, and social rituals at the B School in an effort to foster female success and to soften what some say is the school's alpha male culture. The results have been positive, mixed, and in some cases surprising. New York Times reporter Jody Cantor wrote about the experiment in last Sunday's paper, and she joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you, Jody. Fascinating piece.
Thank you so much.
So let me start right off a little bit with you. We mentioned those low numbers of women, both among students and faculty. That's the sort of broad background here. But fill in some of the details. Describe the challenge that Harvard is trying to address.
The challenge is that there's always been this sort of question, is Harvard Business School a great place for women? And often over the years, the answer was no. Women who came from Wall Street, tough women who worked at Goldman Sachs, Wall Street traders would say, I have been in some really tough environments, but never any place quite as bad as Harvard Law School. Some, not all by any means, but some women did experience open sexual harassment in the classroom. There would be lewd notes passed to them. There was an achievement gap. Women were coming in with the same grades and scores as men, and yet falling behind academically. Being a Baker Scholar is the highest honor you can get at Harvard Business School. And for a long time, the number of female Baker Scholars was very low, commensurate with the number of women in the class. Mm-hmm. Now, I should say, though, that the situation did improve over the years. If you read the stories from, say, 1995 and 1998, they are much worse than the stories by the time you get to 2005, 2010.
Yeah.
And yet the problems did continue to persist, and they especially persisted with female faculty. The numbers of female faculty at HBS are very low, and there was even one year when about a third of the female junior untenured faculty left.
Yeah. Now, you write about, first of all, I want to say, by the way, we did reach out to the Harvard Business School. We had hoped to get the dean or one or two of the professors involved in this experiment. We didn't hear back from some of them. We got an outright decline from others. So there is no presence from the Harvard Business School, but we are going to be hearing from some students soon. But Jody, you wrote about how the business school sort of went about making these changes, and you write about efforts to change the curriculum, rules, social rituals to foster female success. What kind of changes have they been experimenting with?
You know, for a long time, Harvard would do one thing or another thing to try to boost the status of women. There would be a study or there would be a committee. What's different this time around is that the dean, Nouria, and his colleagues really took a much more aggressive approach. They looked at the entirety of the female experience at the school, and they especially looked at the classroom environment. HBS's grading system is unusual. 50% of your grade is class participation. So what you say in class matters immensely. And women were just not speaking up enough. They weren't the only group. The same was true of international students. And when women did speak up, they often felt that they weren't heard. They felt it was the kind of situation where, wait a second, I said something 5 minutes ago and it didn't really register, but then a guy said it 5 minutes later and everybody said, wow, that is a great comment. So the deans did a number of things, but probably the most effective thing they did is they really looked at the environment in the classroom, the way students were treating each other, and they got so granular that they put a new widget in the grading software so that professors could see after each class if they wanted to check who they were calling on, was it balanced by gender, and what sort of class participation grades they were giving out.
And you even write that they did away with the case study method, which has been...
No. They did not do away with it. The case study method is the hallowed method of instruction at Harvard Business School.
They adjusted it, though. Yeah.
Exactly. They introduced a first-year course that was not case study.
I see. And that's because why? I mean, explain why. Because, as you say, the case study method is sort of hallowed ground there at the business school.
So that was for a few reasons. They really wanted to teach students more about teamwork. They wanted to more closely mimic the way business works today. They wanted to have students sort of actively working to solve problems together instead of just answering theoretical questions. Gender was, however, part of the rationale as well. The way the deans explained it to me is that there used to be this kind of hierarchy that inevitably emerged in the HBS classroom, where in subjects like finance and accounting, people who had had a lot of experience, usually men, would find those classes easy. Business school would be like a vacation for them. Whereas if you had never tackled those subjects before, and those people were more likely to be women, they really struggled and they didn't speak up as much in the classroom. So the field classes offered a kind of different and more collaborative model for learning.
Mm. You write that a lot of these changes weren't universally welcome. Tell us why not, how some of the critics within the school responded to this.
There was more criticism on execution than on the fact that they were doing it. I think, you know, Drew Gilpin Faust, the president of Harvard, said that by the time it came time for her to appoint a new dean in 2010, the problems that women were having at the school were unmistakable. She said as soon as she started to do research on what was going on in the school, it was clear to her that this was already a live conversation and people really felt it was a problem. The deans really did not want this to be yet another series of token efforts where nothing really changed. They really wanted to move the needle. And that means they got incredibly specific with a very tricky area. Part of the reason why I think the story is resonating with people is that it really asks the question, where are the limits and what are the boundaries of what we can do to make things better for women? In this case, because it's a school setting and not a corporate environment, they did much more than your workplace could do or my workplace could do. They did things like normally students form their own study groups. They formed the study groups to help promote diversity within those groups. Even small things like students right before Halloween wanted to wear Halloween costumes to class. The administration, however, was worried that this would mean, you know, more of what they didn't like, more of a kind of unserious frat party approach to HBS. And so very shortly before Halloween one year, they just said, no, you guys are not wearing costumes. The students had a mixed reaction to it. On the one hand, I think there were a lot of people who supported what the deans were doing, but there was also a lot of resistance. And there were people who felt like they were in kindergarten or first grade, like they didn't go to business school to learn this stuff. I think part of what happened, by the way, is that the school did not want to weigh the students down with all of the depressing history of the bad things that had happened to women at HBS. So even though they were clear on what they wanted to do, students, I found that when I interviewed students, they did not necessarily know the backstory. And in fact, once I told them in the interviews, it kind of clicked into place for them after the fact. And they said, oh, you know, now I understand why the deans were doing all of that stuff.
We're going to bring in a voice of a student or two, but I want to ask you one more thing about your reporting, because you reported on the results of the sort of first class that graduated in 2013 that went through this sort of this new sort of thinking about how to organize both the culture in and out of the classroom at the Harvard Business School. And the results were impressive. I mean, by the time this class graduated, more female students in the top 5% of the class, female faculty members receiving much improved teaching scores. So is the experiment deemed a big success? Do you think it was successful?
Definitely a success. We emphasized in our story that pretty much everybody we've talked to agreed that the environment had really changed for women. One of the things that my editor and I discussed a lot with this story is, you know, who is the main character? Is the main character Frances Fry, one of the deans? Is the main character Brooke Boyarsky, a student who appears a lot? And what we talked about is, no, the main character is the character of Harvard Business School. At the end of the day, what kind of place is it? And the reporting showed very clearly that it was a place that had gotten much better for women. I think the real theme of the story at the end of the day is the cost of doing something like this. They were successful, but it did not come easy. And I know there are a lot of institutions out there that are thinking about what they can do to become better environments for women. And I think the takeaway here is that you have to be willing to put up with a certain amount of turmoil if you are serious about making changes.
Listeners, we're talking to Jody Kantor. She's a reporter for the New York Times. Her article, Harvard Business School Case Study, Gender Equity, is linked at our website. It was in last Sunday's New York Times. And we're asking you, you can join the conversation, why are there so few women in business schools? What has to change? And what do you think about the efforts at Harvard Business School that Jody's been talking about? We'd like to hear from you, particularly if you are or were a student at the business school. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Let me introduce a couple of other voices into the conversation. Hannah Rosen, she's an editor at The Atlantic and a writer at Slate.com. Her article, It's Still a Bummer to Be a Woman at Harvard, is also linked on our website. And Hannah Rosen, good to have you back on Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Jill Saskin, she's a 2013 graduate of the Harvard Business School. Jill, thanks for joining us as well. Are you there?
Yes, thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to Jody. Let me come to you first. I just wanted to get your response as a graduate in 2013 from the Harvard Business School. What did you make of the changes that you saw? And you know, what do you make of what Jody observed and wrote about?
Well, I think, you know, Jody told a really great story. She had in-depth reporting. That's why it was on the cover of, you know, the Sunday New York Times. But in my experience, HBS is a great place for women. I think, you know, these initiatives show that, you know, HBS is probably one of the most gender-neutral places you could find on Earth. And as a woman at HBS, I never felt like being a woman was a hindrance or held me back. I never felt like I was being judged because of my gender. So I was definitely shocked when I saw the story. Because the experiences that are outlined there didn't really match up with my experience.
Mm. But did you see or did you get a sense of the effort that the business school was trying to make your experience there better? I mean, these things that Jody was describing, did they seem necessary to you? Did you appreciate them?
Sure. So as Jody said earlier, you know, the students didn't know that gender was the backstory, and that's very true. I think the field program, the experiential learning, was a wonderful addition. I never once did it cross my mind that that, you know, may have been put into place because of gender. I think assigning discussion groups was a really great step. It allowed me to meet people from all different sections and, you know, become close to people I wouldn't have met otherwise. You know, the no Halloween costumes in class. I mean, Halloween's my favorite holiday. I love to dress up, but at the end of the day, I think that's a wise decision. It's an academic environment. It's a business environment, and it's really not appropriate. So. Mm. Overall, I think that these efforts, though I didn't know they were happening, I think they probably did really contribute to the positive experience I had.
I understand completely and respect the fact that you had this really positive experience there. But isn't there an issue here that needs to be addressed in some way? And I think Harvard Business School gets credit for trying to address it. I mean, the fact that there are so few women still in business school, including at the Harvard Business School. What more has to happen to turn those numbers around?
Well, it's not just to interrupt for one second.
Sure, go ahead, Jody.
It's 40% of the class. So I don't think the concern, the numbers have only been rising over time. So I actually don't think the concern is representation specifically. You know, I think the concern is really represented by the on-the-record quotes, it's fantastic that Jill had such a great experience at the school, and there are many women who did, but also lots and lots of women who went on the record with me, who have talked to deans and administrators over time, who have talked to professors. It was pretty clear that most people, including the president of the university, did feel that there was a serious problem here.
Hannah Rosen, I'd love to get you in on this conversation. You wrote in your piece in Slate.com responding to Jody's article, and you said your takeaway is that men and women at Harvard Business School have a lot more in common with one another than they do with everyone else in the world. What are you referring to there?
That was one takeaway. Jody did mention this in the story, that some students were alienated generally by the entitlement and sense of richness at the place. So it wasn't just a gender problem. Some of it was a class problem, that everybody graduating from Harvard Business School makes a certain amount of money and then thus faces a certain particular set of problems. So I was just trying to inject another angle into the dynamics that she was describing.
The idea that the issue of wealth and this economic divide has a lot to do with what's going on there as well.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. That, you know, at the upper echelons, there's just a different set of problems that people face. And I think that that's a place where it's particularly difficult for women. I think there's been a lot of surveys about women and wealth and finance being an especially difficult industry for women to crack. The thing that was so fascinating about Jody's examination of this place is that it exists at this intersection between academia and finance. And academia is a place where women have done extremely well, increasingly so over the years. And finance is a place where women have made almost no progress. And so that was one of the funny things. You know, how do we think about women in their relationship to money, and why finance is especially difficult for women to crack.
And why is that? Because, I mean, one of the things, this struck me as well about Jody's piece, and that is, you know, one of the statistics out there, only 4% of Fortune 500 companies have women in CEO positions. So aren't business schools like Harvard Business School sort of merely reflecting what's already out there? And the fact that Harvard has made the progress that it has made seems pretty impressive, given the reality of the business world out there. I don't know who wants to take it. Yeah, Hannah, go ahead.
What he described that was so interesting was at the end of the story that there was one woman she described. I believe her name was Kate Upton. Is that right? No, it's an Upton.
Amanda
somebody
Upton.
Who was. Yeah, people were very impressed with her. She's somebody who knew her stuff, who could spout off the numbers, who would teach, you know, who would prepare people to get ready for exams, and the women really admired her as someone who could really keep up with the guys. And then she made a decision at the end not to take a super risky job, but to take a job managing a family's finances in order to be close to her, I believe, fiancé. And so it's a very complex set of things that go into what women decide to do and how they behave around money, because it seemed clear from the story, although Jody didn't say this explicitly, that she would have had a lot of other options and could have taken a job making a lot more money with a lot more high risk. But she chose not to, so you can't really blame her for that. It's complicated what goes into that decision.
800-423-8255. It's 800-423-TALK to join this conversation. We're talking about women, the Harvard Business School, and business schools in general. Jody Cantor, reporter for the New York Times, wrote a really fascinating piece in this past Sunday, Harvard Business School Case Study, Gender Equity. It's linked to our website. So let's go to the phones. Alana is calling from Cambridge. Alana, I understand, yeah, you were a student at the Harvard Business School, right?
I am, yes.
Good. Well, what's on your mind? What are you hearing?
I think that I really would echo Jody's comments on how much HBS has invested to make this a great place for women. And I think it's not, zooming out a little bit, it's not just because of problems at HBS. It's an issue of how can HBS best influence the gender issues in corporate America more broadly. And I think I would echo Hannah's comments as well, that this has been, it's been a great place to be a woman. And I worry that young women will read Jody's article and feel like they're in some way entering into a hostile environment by applying to business school. And I think that's not the case. This is one of the best places, if not the best place, for young women to go to move their careers.
So is the idea that there's that part of the atmosphere at a place like Harvard Business School includes this sort of hyper alpha male energy, is that unfair? Because that idea is certainly out there.
I think there's a lot of energy here of all sorts, and I think people who are here, both men and women, are going to be leaders, and that is clear. It's clear about the men, and it's clear about the women as well.
All right, Alana.
I think, by the way, though, that Alana does raise a fantastic point, though, which is that there is, I think, first of all, Harvard Business School over the years has experienced a real tension over how publicly it's okay to discuss this. And I can't tell you how much credit I give to Dean Noria and his team for really being willing to go there in the story with me and go on the record and talk about the problems they've seen over the years. And they knew that the things they did not go perfectly, and they were, in fact, quite self-critical in the interviews. And so I think that, first of all, I, as a journalist, I applaud their willingness to come forward. But second of all, there is always this fear hanging over not just this problem, but a lot of feminist problems over, you know, if we are open about them, are we going to discourage people? I bet Hannah has found the same thing over the years, especially with writing about work-life balance and fertility mm-hmm. issues. I meet so many women in their early 20s who have this kind of anxiety by proxy over, you know, reading stories about the mommy wars and whatnot. And it's like they've absorbed all of this stuff before they're even at the life stage where they're ready to confront it. And there is, I think, a fear on everybody's part that, you know, nobody wants these stories to be a reason for women not entering the fray.
Well, Alana, I want to thank you for the call. Let's take another call. Steve is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Anthony, it seems to me when the president of the university gives a dictate and she appoints a dean, people are going to get the message, and very quickly you're going to see the grades of women going up, the evaluation of female teachers going up, and also admittance rates for women going up. I don't think this has anything to do with a real change, but it's just people get the message and they react accordingly.
Well, Steve, let me take that on board. Hannah, let me come to you. I mean, I want to get Jody's response, too, but I'd like, what do you make of Steve's response there? Because is that what you read, that this was really a dictate rather than a real effort to foster change and productive change at that?
Oh, that's just a matter of perspective. I'm sure some people experienced it as a dictate, as Jody quoted some people who did experience it. That how could you help it? I mean, it was an incredibly ambitious experiment, so interesting. They were really committed to it, you know, down to monitoring class by class. So it's inevitable that some people are going to perceive that as false and oppressive and a dictate. It's inevitable. I'm sure some women did, too. And nonetheless, you know, any ambitious experiment will be received that way.
Sure.
I think the key to answering this question is really looking at the subjectivity of the class participation grade. And, you know, I talked to a top American businesswoman who had gone to Harvard, and what she said is the reason why HBS grades are so interesting is that they work the same way grades work, the way life works in a real professional environment, which is that two people can be sitting in a meeting and say basically exactly the same thing, and yet based on who they are, what they've said can be judged in a totally different way. And that was what was happening in the HBS classroom. So I don't think that there's a case that, you know, HBS like secretly cooked the books on women's grades. That's ridiculous. I do think the key is the very sort of subjective nature of the class participation grade. The people I talked to thought that the fact that, you know, the fact that this was sort of the message coming from above might have influenced the margins. But the problem with what the caller just said is that there were so many factors mm-hmm. That you can pin down more fully that were clearly influencing women's grades for the better in an honest way, that I think you can't say that the fix was in. We see a classroom environment that is getting much, much better. You know, within a few years, the classroom environment is going from a place where cruel jokes and even some forms of sexual harassment were basically tolerated when the professor was out of the room, to a place where that stuff really does not happen anymore. I can't tell you, the people at HBS, they read the story and they can't believe that this stuff happened in the past. They say this is not our school. So I'd have to say I disagree with the caller on the whole.
Hannah Rosen, we have about 10 seconds left. I just want to ask one final question to you. We heard from that really thoughtful caller, Alana, who's a student there, who really talked about the possibility of Harvard Business School changing and leading the way within the business world, outside of academia. From what you read, are you confident that these kinds of changes could do that and really change the world outside of the business school world?
They could certainly help. Imagine if you got every ambitious elite business school to decide that they were only going to let companies that are committed to certain values recruit on their campuses. That could make a huge difference. It could just set a standard in the finance industry for a certain mode of behavior and treatment of women.
Well, really interesting. Hannah Rosen, she's editor at The Atlantic and writer at Slate. Her article, It's Still a Bummer to Be a Woman at Harvard, is also linked on our website. She's also author of the book, The End of Men. Hannah Rosen, thank you so much. And Jody Cantor, reporter for The New York Times, her article, Harvard Business School Case Study, Gender Equity, is also linked at our website. Jody Cantor, thanks for your work and thanks for coming on the program. We're very grateful.
Thank you for having me.
We also had Jill Saskin. She's a 2013 graduate of the Harvard Business School. Jill, thank you and good luck.
Thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. Up next, we'll continue our conversations with the mayoral candidates. Today, we meet David James Wyatt, the only Republican in the race. I'm Anthony Brooks with Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.